Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
To another episode of Outside the Box, part of the Pictureless Podcast Network. I'm your host, Callan Elsler, joined as always by Justin Havelock. Justin, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. It's been a busy time of year with exams and everything coming up for me, but baseball season's just around the corner now, so I'm excited to get some games underway. I know we already had two underway this week.
Yeah, just like you said, baseball is back. This is opening day week, Thursday. By the time you're listening, we will have opening day, and I'm sure, like most of us, we will be glued to our couches and not moving to watch baseball all day, and it'll be a great occasion. Like you talked about, we did have two games that happened last week between the Dodgers and the Padres in Korea, and I'm sure we'll get into the results of those games. Most importantly, we're going to be breaking down the latest news and notes throughout the league as we prepare for opening day. So on this episode, we're going through matchup by matchup, just going to talk team by team and try and give you the most important tidbits as we get set for this first week. So we'll start off with the Milwaukee Brewers as they take on the New York Mets. We'll start off this week in Milwaukee, where manager Pat Murphy has officially announced what we all kind of expected. Jack Chinchorro has made the opening day roster. He'll be this team's starting center fielder. I guess your overall thoughts on Chinchorro for this season, where he hits in the lineup, kind of what you expect from this year, and anybody he will push for playing time or bounce out of playing time as a result.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Jack Chinchorro. I know once he signed that big extension, like you said, it was certainly no surprise that he's making the opening day roster. They've already sunk quite a bit of money into him. But I'm really excited to see what he can bring to that table with power speed combo, that hit tool. I mean, he's going to be a really fun player to watch. I know I've already grabbed quite a few shares of him already this draft season to the annoyance of some of my league mates. So it's really interesting. You mentioned the outfield in Milwaukee. I know we've got Garrett Mitchell in the leadoff spot and Bryce Terang hitting ninth right now with Sal Frelick sliding over to third base. So I think there's going to be plenty of playing time there for Jack Chinchorro, especially with Joey Ortiz currently coming off the bench.
Yeah, and we talked, and Pat Murphy also sounds like to announce, or beat writer speculation, Joey Ortiz will be making this roster kind of as a least start the year, a utility option off the bench. So we'll see what sort of playing time he gets in there. But we're getting that point with the Brewers that they're getting that set lineup we kind of want, so we'll be curious to see how they started up with all the mixing matching pieces with Gary Sanchez, everything like that. As for the rotation, we did get confirmation that DL Hall will be making his Brewer debut in the rotation, officially making the roster as a starter, with Jacob Junis and Joe Ross also joining the rotation. Not too much to add in terms of that. The real big thing that we're going to be keeping a very close eye on as we start the season will be that closer mix, with Devin Williams officially going to be placed on the IL on Thursday. we'll see who gets the first save opportunity between Joel Piamps, Trevor McGill, Abner Uribe. I know I personally got a share of Piamps as some of my fab leagues kicked off this past weekend. So we'll see how that one plays out. Over in New York, where we also got some pretty big news, J.D. Martinez officially signed a one-year $12.5 million deal with the New York Mets. He won't be ready to start the season. The Mets have announced that he's going to start the year in AAA just to get some at-bats, work his way back. I don't expect he'll need much more than the initial 10 days that will be placed on the IL. But as a result of that, he thought maybe there's be playing time for Mark Vientos at DH. Nope, he was also optioned to AAA. So I guess your overall takeaways of this J.D. Martinez signing, who does this kick out for playing time? What's your expectations for him in that Mets lineup?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one. I'll admit my first reaction was a little bit of disappointment, hoping that he would wind up on a better offense. I know I had a couple of Mark Vientos shares that he messed with Vientos now going down to AAA. But Vientos was likely in a bit of a platoon role anyways. So J.D. Martinez, we know, still has plenty of pop left in that bat. And, you know, the Mets aren't the greatest offense, but that could mean a spot hitting in the top of the lineup instead of, you know, eighth or ninth or coming off the bench in Texas. So I think this is good, at least for J.D. Martinez in terms of playing time.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him hitting behind Pete Alonso, hitting behind Francisco Lindor. Not exactly a bad spot for you to end up in. So J.D. Martinez will put up pretty J.D. Martinez-like numbers, help out the top of the order, and I'll just move guys like Starling Marte down a little bit and add some more protection. So the Mets lineup is quietly becoming a little bit better, and I know draft season's pretty much over, but an offense I'm very intrigued with as the season will kick off on Thursday. Anything else with this team, at the very least, that you're keeping an eye on as we head into Thursday?
I think the only other thing I'd be keeping an eye on would be Tyler McGill, as we know he's been having a great spring training, has earned a roster spot, and frankly, the Mets have little to push him out of a roster spot, so I think he should have a long leash here to sort of get another chance with the team and see if he can develop into the player we want him to be.
Yeah, we'll move over to the next matchup with the Angels and the Baltimore Orioles. We'll start out in Anaheim, where we'll keep this pretty quick and simple. Robert Stevens is going to start the year on the IL. Ron Washington's already come out and said Carlos Estevez will be the closer. That solves that one problem. Nolan Shanwell's been dealing with some back soreness as camp wraps up. It sounds like he'll still be good to go for opening day, but just monitor that situation closely. Other than that, the Angels have been a pretty open book this entire spring training, and I've kind of been enjoying that as a fantasy manager, especially we talked about throughout spring their tendency to try and run some more, how Washington's been pretty clear as to his lineup. I am intrigued because he has been playing Anthony Rendon in the leadoff spot the past couple days, so wonder if that's going to stick around. So before we get into the more deeper talk with the Orioles moves, any other takeaways from the Angels as we reach this point in spring training?
I'm just excited to see what they can bring to the table this year in their first year without Shohei Ohtani. I wouldn't worry too much. You mentioned the Anthony Rendon hitting in the leadoff spot. You know, like you mentioned, Shanwell's been struggling with some back issues and is projected to sort of be their leadoff hitters. So personally, I think that's sort of just them trying to give him a chance to get fully healthy before the season starts, not push a young guy that was just drafted last year too hard.
And we'll go over to Baltimore, where we talk about there's some more serious while the Brewers, they did the right thing. Jackson Scherer is going to start the year in the major leagues. The Orioles went the opposite direction. They announced that Jackson Holliday, Colton Pimeo, Norby, Keston Hjerstad, all going to start the year in AAA. We'll get to the playing time implications of other players on the roster as a result of these moves. But a lot of us were drafting Jackson Holliday as a spec ad, as a mid-round player, thinking he's going to have the job. How early do you expect Jackson Holliday to get up to the major leagues as a result of this?
Yeah, this is a really tricky one. I think it could be as early as the first month of the season, though. We know the kind of talent that Jackson Holliday is bringing to the table. You know, like you mentioned, I drafted several shares of him myself and personally will be holding on to him. I'm not going to just drop him to the waiver wire just yet, especially because while there is quite a logjam there in Baltimore, Jackson Holliday is the kind of talent that could very easily force playing time. force the Orioles to put him in the lineup every single day. I'm not exactly panicking just yet. I know a couple of people pointed out that his strikeout rate was a little bit high, over 30% in spring training. But, you know, we've also seen situations like this in the past where we overreact a bit too much to spring training numbers. I think it's much more likely that this is maybe a little bit of a service time situation here with Jackson Holliday and sort of taking advantage of the fact that they've got this stacked lineup, give him a bit of extra seasoning in the minors, and I think he'll be up in very short order.
But the good thing for the Orioles is they didn't send down everybody who's young and impressive. Jordan Westberg and Colton Cowser both are speculated to be making the opening day roster. We know Westberg likely will have a spot at starting at second base now that Jackson Holliday will not be up from opening day. The real playing time crunch for me comes with Colton Cowser. We know the Orioles have their outfield kind of set at this point of Hayes, Mullins, and Santander. So how do you think, first off, your impressions of Westberg, if anything, has changed, if I'm reading this too much, and what do you expect from Colton Cowser? You think he earns his way into the lineup? Do they mix and match? What's your early read on this playing time position in the outfield?
Yeah, Colton Cowser, I think it's going to be interesting to see here. I know right now Ryan O'Hearn is projected to be a starter for the Baltimore Orioles. He may even start on opening day. I don't think he's going to get regular playing time in this lineup, which could free up room for Mountcastle to slide over to first base and Colton Cowser to DH. There should be plenty of room to just rotate through outfielders here and give Colton Cowser reps at a corner outfield spot. I think he will work his way into playing time as long as he's hitting. And like we just talked about, the Baltimore Orioles sent a lot of talented guys down to the minor leagues. So frankly, if he's not hitting, he's not going to be with the team for too long anyways.
Let's move over to Atlanta as they will battle the Philadelphia Phillies in a rematch of last year's NLDS. The Braves will start off with, they made some splashes over the past week or so, signing Adam Duvall to a one-year contract to be kind of the fourth outfielder we initially would have thought, but manager Brian Snicker did come out and say that he is planning on platooning him with Jared Kelnick, taking away some of that excitement for Kelnick as an everyday player in Atlanta. So do you buy this as a straight platoon? Do you think one has the opportunity to usurp the other out in Atlanta?
I personally would lean a bit towards Adam Duvall here. If nothing else, like I talked about a bit last week on the podcast, I think Adam Duvall is going much, much later in drafts right now. I've also never really fully bought in on the Jared Kelnick hype. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. Maybe he can push his way out of a platoon role, but for now, I think I'm just sort of buying the lower drafted player here with Duvall.
And then the Braves, they worked their last battle was for the fifth starter job. Well, they made it pretty simple for us to read. They sent both Bryce Elder and AJ Smith-Schuyler down to AAA, which means that Ronaldo Lopez signed as a free agent this offseason after a couple great years in the bullpen for the White Sox and then before being traded over to Anaheim, has won the fifth starter job. So do you think he has a firm grasp and can run with this job? I guess, what are your expectations for Ronaldo Lopez in that spot? And are you interested in any other spec options in case Lopez falters or if there was an injury in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think I'd definitely be concerned about just how many innings they can get out of him, given some of the struggles that Bryce Elder has had and, you know, Smith-Schuyler being one of their top young players. I think this is sort of the right approach from Atlanta, but I'm not sure Ronaldo Lopez is going to finish the year in the rotation there. I don't think he's a guy you're going to get 120 plus innings out of. You know, again, I'd sort of look for a Bryce Elder or Smith-Schuyler later in drafts. They're going to be much cheaper, and those could be the guys ending the year in the rotation, which is what I always look for when I'm drafting, is who's going to end the year with a job, not just who's going to start the year with one.
Speaking of ending the year with a job, the Phillies have leading towards their lineup the past couple of days, where Johan Rojas has seemed to have won the center field job. I know there's some speculation from some beat writers in Philly that he didn't have us locked up. Sounds like speculation from Philadelphia beat reporters is that Rojas will be out there on Thursday as a team starting center fielder, keeping Whit Merrifield as that bench option. The big storyline, at least in our eyes, in terms of the lineup right now, is kind of how things are going at this point right now. Nick Castellanos is down in the seven spot, while Kyle Schwarber has continued his hold on the leadoff spot. I know at this point it's still spring and it's early in the season, so lineups are very fluid, but does this have the potential to stick with Castellanos this low?
I'm very curious. I know he didn't have the greatest spring, so I'm a little bit concerned to see him hitting that low, especially with Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm both leapfrogging him here in the batting order. Both perfectly serviceable bats, but hardly elite by any standard. I'm definitely going to be keeping a close eye on that. I think maybe this is Philly's sort of trying to take advantage of the offense that they have and, you know, try and juice the bottom of the order a little bit. I know they've got, you know, Johan Rojas leading off ninth, which sort of gives him sort of that double leadoff role with Rojas and Schwarber. I'm very curious to see what happens here. I feel like this is a batting order that's not necessarily set in stone, and we may see some tinkering even in the first week of the season.
Yeah, and real quick, the Phillies, they're also dealing with some injuries in their pitching staff. Taiwan Walker will be starting here on the IL for shoulder discomfort, as well as Orion Kerkering, currently battling the flu, so they will not be ready for opening day. Walker, it seems like Turnbull is going to be adding into the rotation. I don't think anyone's going to be interested in Spencer Turnbull from a fantasy perspective, but with Kerkering, he was a speculative ad late in drafts for a Philly closer job. So do we have a favorite right now in Philly for the closer position, or the next man up if it is Alvarado, like a lot are speculating?
Yeah, I think I definitely wouldn't be taking Kerkering off my draft boards right now, especially given that, you know, he is just battling the flu here. This shouldn't be something that's too long-term. But I'd also keep a close eye on Jeff Hoffman. You know, we've seen what he can do in the past. I know he was stuck in Colorado for ages. You know, former Blue Jay, shout out there. But I'd keep a very close eye on him. I think if Alvarado falters and Kerkering is still out or still sort of getting his feet under him, Jeff Hoffman could be the guy that gets a shot in the ninth inning.
We'll stick with the bullpen talk as we move over to Toronto as they take on the Tampa Bay Rays, where Jordan Romano probably going to start the RNIL with elbow inflammation. Eric Swanson, the likely next man up, probably going to start the RNIL with forearm soreness. So you're our resident Blue Jay fan, Justin. Can you give us any sort of read as to a timetable for these guys and who is going to be starting the year getting saves in Toronto?
Yeah, I think these are two that are definitely players that you need to be keeping an eye on. I know both are slated to miss at least a couple of weeks. They're being sent for further testing right now. So that's definitely a situation to monitor closely, especially because, you know, as you pointed out, Eric Swanson's the next man up. So it sort of creates a bit of a vacuum. Personally, I'd be leaning towards Tim Mayza being the guy to watch here in Toronto. Specifically because I know there's been a lot of talk from other Blue Jays players about how sharp Tim Mayza has looked, the idea of him having a bounce back season. And now there's a clear path to see, you know, is this just, you know, him being friendly with his teammates, or is there really some potential here? And the other name I'd keep an eye on is Chad Green. We know he was coming off of Tommy John surgery late last year. Only pitched, I think, about 10 or so innings, so he didn't quite get a chance to get his feet under him and get properly stretched out. Now that he's had a full off season to recover, I'd be keeping an eye on Chad Green as well.
And then as well with the Blue Jays, we talked a lot about Bowden Francis over the past week or so, of him likely getting that fifth spot for Alec Manoah. It's officially likely going to happen with Manoah going to IL. And Danny Jansen, also going to be placed on the IL with a fractured wrist. If you got some late Alejandro Kirk shares, fire him up, because he will likely get a lot of playing time as a result of this injury. With that, and likely taking one of them out of the DH at-bats, does anybody potentially benefit there? I know it's tough to word it that way with Turner probably DHing, but has anything changed with your read at that spot?
There's certainly a lot of moving pieces, especially Kevin Kiermaier Struggled with a knee injury just yesterday, was back in the lineup today, so it looks like everything's fine. But we know he's got an injury history as well. I think Davis Schneider could be a big beneficiary, playing a little bit of second base, a little bit of left field, a little bit of DH maybe when Kirk's behind the plate. I would keep an eye on Ernie Clement as well. He's made the team out of camp now. It was just announced today. And I think there's a chance that he could wind up being sort of the sleeper at third base here, which I know is something we've already talked plenty about on the podcast. So keep an eye on Ernie Clement as well, because he could get a good share of playing time at third base and maybe even some reps at DH as well.
And we'll go over to Tampa Bay, where things are a little bit still not as fluid. Josh Lowe officially going to start the year in the IL with a grade 1 oblique strain. Jonathan Aranda also officially going to be on the IL. He broke his finger during practice and during training throughout last week. So that opens some more possible playing time for the Rays, who, let's face it, when you get more playing time, they're never going to complain about that. So any beneficiaries in Tampa Bay right now with Aranda and Lowe likely going to be missing some time to start the year?
Yeah, the biggest name I'd be keeping an eye out is Richie Palacios. I know I talked about him last week on the podcast, but he's a name that I've been hearing more and more. Seems to be a bit of a pre-hype sleeper. Hasn't picked up a ton of traction yet, but he's got a really exciting bat and is a player to keep an eye on. And then also just keep an eye on Harold Ramirez as well, because we know he's a power hitter. With Aranda and Lowe both out, I think there could be enough playing time that both of them could be in the lineup and hitting, you know, in the middle of the order.
Yeah. We have the Washington Nationals. We're going to be traveling to Cincinnati on opening day for the yearly Cincinnati opening day. The Nationals, we can keep it nice and simple. Instead of calling up their young guys, they are sending Dylan Cruz and James Wood, both the AAA, to start the year in favor of likely Eddie Rosario, Jesse Winker, and other players of that like. There isn't too much more to add there, but a similar question what we talked about some of the other guys who aren't starting here in the big leagues. Do you expect we're going to see either of those guys this year? Or are they worth a stash if you're in a deeper league, or obviously not dynasty, but when do you expect we could possibly see those Nats outfielders?
Yeah, the one I'd be more interested in stashing right now is James Wood. He absolutely tore the cover off the ball in spring training. We're talking like Wyatt Langford levels of good, was one of the best players in all of baseball during spring. And, you know, there's not really much worth talking about on the Washington Nationals right now. So I think he could be up with this team in short order. They don't exactly have a ton to play for, so he may not be up as quickly as someone like Jackson Holliday, but at some point, you know, he's going to run out of things to do in AAA, and I think he'll have to be called up, just hit his way right onto a major league roster.
And as for Cincinnati, you remember when during all offseason we were talking about playing time crunch and roster crunches? That was fun. Cincinnati doesn't exactly have that much anymore, while we already have Nolevi Marte going to start the year out with a suspension. Since we've last recorded together, TJ Friedl officially been placed on the IL with a fractured wrist, and Matt McLain unlikely to be ready to go for opening day. Still dealing with shoulder soreness, where David Bell has kind of come out and said anything is on the table. So he could have surgery, he could not have surgery. Who knows what's going to go on there, but we know for sure is he's not going to be ready for opening day, which now leaves Nick Martini as the team's current projected DH on roster resource. So that was a fun couple of months. Again, similar question, is there a beneficiary to this? I know it's not in terms of playing time with all the depth slowly going away for Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, I think obviously you've got sort of the big risers here with Jonathan India, Spencer Steer, Will Benson, all having a much clearer path to playing time. I also know there was a small move between the Reds and the Blue Jays this week with Santiago Espinal getting traded to Cincinnati. You know, given the fact that they have lost a couple of bats in that infield, it's worth keeping an eye on. He is somebody that does have a little bit of power in his bat, and we've seen Great American Ballpark loves to bring that out in a player. So, you know, certainly not a guy I'd be getting aggressive on off the waiver wire, but, you know, worth monitoring.
Yeah, like you said, Will Benson and Jake Fraley have clear locks in terms of outfield at bats now, with India likely sliding in at second or DH. So monitor the situation closely, but the playing time crunch is not too much more existent. We'll head over to the next matchup with the San Francisco Giants taking on the San Diego Padres. We'll start out in San Francisco, where we talked about it, but Blake Snell officially has signed with the Giants. Manager Bob Melvin has, and Blake Snell himself have come out and said, we will not be ready for opening day, but it should be a pretty quick ramp up for Snell. I believe he did throw a 70 pitch throwing session with in front of scouts prior to signing. So it's likely going to be one or two minor league matchups, and then Snell will be ready to go. But as far as the Giants rotation as a whole, what are you kind of expecting out of them at this point? You know, we have some interesting names with Jordan Hicks and Keaton Wynn in rotation. So any big takeaways from the Giants rotation now that Snell's officially going to poke his way into us?
I'm not overly high on the Giants right now, especially in that division with, you know, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Padres all looking fairly sharp. And then, you know, obviously the Rockies aren't good, but you don't exactly want to be a pitcher going into Coors Field. I'm not very high on the Giants right now. Blake Snell signing definitely does make them a bit more interesting. Like you mentioned, he's pretty much ready to go, shouldn't miss too much time, but I'm not overly high on the team here. The biggest note that I would have here is that it's a little bit interesting. They have currently Jorge Soler hitting second in the lineup with Matt Chapman in the cleanup spot. Chapman has excelled in the cleanup spot in the past. I know that was something I used to get quite frustrated with him as a Blue Jay, not getting enough time in that spot from John Schneider. So keep an eye on that. And yeah, I think that would be it with the Giants.
We'll go over to the Padres, where we actually have game action to talk about. There wasn't too much in terms of quotes, but we did see a lot in terms of playing time. So rather than just go through it all, I'm just going to kick it over to you, Justin. What were probably your biggest takeaways for the Padres and for usage, lineups, whatever you feel like we can talk about from the two games we saw out in Korea?
Yeah, obviously, you know, with two games, it's a very small sample, so you know, it's really hard to dig too deep into the numbers here yet, but I'm personally very excited to see both Jackson Merrill and Graham Pauly making the team out of camp. Jackson Merrill will be starting in center field. Graham Pauly seems to be in a bit of a platoon with Tyler Wade, but I mean, it's Tyler Wade. I don't think that'll last very long. I think it'll really depend with Graham Pauly a bit more about how quickly Machado can get healthy and other some other bats in the minor leagues that force that DH spot open a little bit. And then also keep an eye on the rotation. I know right now Matt Waldron is projected to have the fifth spot. He's definitely a player worth keeping an eye on, but they also have Johnny Brito and Randy Vasquez pushing for some playing time as well.
Yeah, and for me, it was the bullpen was the big takeaway. Robert Suarez is a clear closer. I know there's a lot of questions as to a committee. Mike Schilt brought him in the eighth inning of a very close game and kept him in for the ninth. So I think it's clear at this point that Robert Suarez has the at least the lead for the Padres for saves. And as someone who took a lot of mid speculations on Robert Suarez, I was very happy to see that. So it's good to see. We'll see how long it actually lasts with Matsui dealing with his back injury from spring training. Woosuke Go starting year in AAA. So it's good to start off that. We'll see where.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, it'll be the spot for everyone. From book club to game night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Ends up. We'll continue with the theme of teams who played last week, where the Cardinals will be playing the Los Angeles Dodgers this week. We'll start off with Dodgers since we are talking about last week. And Justin, I'm not sure if you heard, there's some big news about this guy, Shohei Ohtani.
I haven't heard of him, no.
No, yeah, I didn't know there was a thing, but we can't get too into it because there isn't too much going on right now, at least noteworthy. As we know, there's currently Major League Baseball is investigating the situation between him and his translator and some alleged gambling. We don't know for sure the extent of the investigation and what may be uncovered, but as far as fantasy goes, are you treating Shohei Ohtani any differently at this point? Drafts are likely over if you have Ohtani on your roster. Are you treating him any different than you would a normal Shohei Ohtani week?
I think, and I know this is something I've talked about in the past on the podcast, this is a situation where we need to wait for the team or for the league to give us any further news before we start taking action ourselves. I know I have one share of Shohei Ohtani, actually in our guillotine league, which is certainly not ideal because a slow start there can be make or break. But I looked at it the other day and I'm like, I cannot conceivably bench Shohei Ohtani until somebody tells me that he's not in the starting lineup. If he's going out there and playing baseball games, he's still in my lineup. If we hear news about him being placed on the restricted list or something, you know, then I'll start to panic. But I think for now, we just sort of need to take a wait and see approach. You know, the talent is not something you want sitting on your bench.
Yep, completely agree. Not too much more to add there. Just as always, monitor the situation very closely because things can change in the drop of a hat. But sticking with LA, again, another team that we don't have too much to take away in terms of playing time, which is nice. Dave Roberts stuck with a same lineup two straight games. Evan Phillips got the save like we expected. Awesome. The big takeaway from our eyes is their rotation has officially been announced, and especially for after the Korea games. Bobby Miller will slide into the two spot behind Tyler Glasnow and will make his second start of the year on Thursday, with Yamamoto's next start being pushed till Saturday, and then the remaining two starters, Gavin Stone and James Paxton. Anything you want to take away from this news? Any late round flyers or fab ads you're trying to make for any of these pitchers?
Yeah, I think the cat's already out of the bag on this one, but Gavin Stone is the big one that draws my eye here, especially him getting that fourth spot over James Paxton. You know, that could be maybe a little bit of the Dodgers trying to predict matchups and think ahead. We know that's very on brand for them, but it seems like they've got a lot of confidence in Gavin Stone right now. And this is one of those situations where I'm going to follow the confidence that the team has in a player until I have reason to believe otherwise.
Yep. And as for the Cardinals, they were another team with some playing time competition out in center field. They've made their decision. Victor Scott officially optioned to the minor leagues, will not start the year with the Cardinals, leading way for Dylan Carlson to start the year at center field, with Lars Nootbaar likely to start the year on the IL, as well as Tommy Edman. First off, any interest in Dylan Carlson in some of your deeper leagues? And then second, Victor Scott, same question we've been asking for some of these prospects. When do you expect we may see him up with the majors this year? Is he worth holding on to if you tried to take a late round stash with him?
Yeah, I think Dylan Carlson is a little bit more interesting than some of the other post-hype sleepers we've talked about, like Jarrod Kelnick. I'm definitely a little bit intrigued by the fact that he is batting eighth and he's not in the leadoff spot, which will be Brendan Donovan. So, you know, this could be a situation where we do see Victor Scott sooner rather than later. And I know I mentioned last week, Victor Scott, if you're not familiar, had 94 stolen bases in the minor leagues last year. That's a lot of stolen bases. He's definitely a player that, especially if I have a need for speed, I'm going to leave on my bench for now and sort of see how does Dylan Carlson do through the first couple of weeks of the season. Is there some whispers about Victor Scott getting called up? And if not, then I might move on. If you're loaded up on speed already, there's someone else out there that you want to take a flyer on. You know, I think Victor Scott is somebody that you can move on from, but I think if you have a need for speed, definitely don't give up on Victor Scott too quickly.
Yeah, Sonny Gray is a name we also got to monitor with the Cardinals. His rehab has been going well, but it still doesn't seem like he will be ready to go for opening day. The question then becomes, do they put him on the IL or do they skip a spot in the rotation? That's still up in the air, but monitor the situation closely with Sonny Gray. He may only miss one turn through the rotation and then be right back in there. So that's some really good news on his front. Moving on over to the Minnesota Twins as they will travel to Kansas City to take on the Royals to open the season. The Twins, they've also added some rotation news to open the season. Anthony DeSclafani likely to miss the season with a strained forearm injury, which means that Louis Varland has a spot in the Twins rotation locked up as the number five starter. Again, Cat's kind of out of the bag on this one, like we talked about Gavin Stone, but what's your level of excitement for Louis Varland as he enters the rotation as the clear starter?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see what Louis Varland could do this year. I know he's a player that really sort of had flashes last year of what he can do. So I'm definitely excited to see him back in the majors and back in the rotation as well. But I'd definitely be taking guys like Gavin Stone ahead of him. I don't think he's necessarily as well-rounded. You know, I know the plan was initially for him to be coming out of the bullpen, and then, you know, the Twins' hand was somewhat forced when DeSclafani got hurt. So, you know, keep an eye on what Louis Varland's doing, but I'm not certainly going to get too aggressive here.
And with Johan Duran likely going to be starting the year on the IL with an oblique strain, have you heard anything from beat reporters or from Rocco Baldelli as to how that back end of the bullpen will be managed and who should be our favorite for saves in Minnesota as we start the year?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet. And I think this is a situation where this could be a bit of a bullpen by committee where we see a little bit of Griffin Jacks, a little bit of Brock Stewart. Frankly, if he pitches the way he did last season, I'd even keep an eye on Cody Funderburk, as he's a player who just strikes out batters for days. I just took him the last overall pick in our RP-only draft that we did the other day. So that's another name to keep an eye on there as well.
As for the Royals there, luckily, in terms for a Royals fan, not too much going on. The only current injury, Michael Massey, going to start the year and likely on the IL, dealing with a back injury. Outside of that, they haven't really had the big camp injuries, which has been nice for them. Any big takeaways from Royals camp in terms of playing time or something you're monitoring as they open the season?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway I have here is Hunter Renfro in the cleanup spot right now. You know, that Kansas City batting order is not exactly the greatest, but, you know, we've seen Hunter Renfro does have quite a bit of power. Having guys like Bobby Witt and MJ Melendez batting ahead of him, you know, he's a player that I think is worth a spec ad right now. I know he's gone undrafted in many of my leagues. And yeah, I think I'd be a lot more interested in Renfro right now than Adam Frazier, who's going to be taking over at second base with Michael Massey out.
Sticking with the AL Central, the Detroit Tigers will take on the Chicago White Sox. With Detroit, they've been another team where it's clear rotation has been addressed and decisions have been made as to who's going to be making their way into the rotation. They've had a battle for three rotation spots we've talked about over the past couple weeks with Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Reese Olson. AJ Hinch has officially announced Matt Manning will start the year in the minor leagues with Reese Olson and Casey Mize grabbing the last two rotation spots. So any intrigue as we start the year with either of those two options, either one that you're more excited about?
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by this Tigers lineup right now. Sorry, the Tigers rotation right now. They do have a very easy schedule to start the season, especially starting with the Chicago White Sox, who I think we all know are not going to be the most dangerous team this year. Casey Mize, I mean, we know the kind of player that he can be when he's on his game. You know, he's further removed from Tommy John surgery now. The velocity's up. There's been a lot of hype coming out of spring training. I'm absolutely buying in. And then Reese Olson sort of, you know, as you mentioned, seems to be a little bit forgotten here. I think it's worth noting Matt Manning has been pretty solid through spring training. So I think it's certainly a vote of confidence that both Mize and Olson forced him to AAA.
And as we go to the White Sox, they've also had some news come out this week, or in the past week or so. Michael Kopech has been officially moved to the bullpen, where he may be in the mix for some saves. I know it's a very loaded question because it's the White Sox bullpen, so who's really trying to rely on them for saves? But do you have a favorite out in Chicago, or have you heard anything from beat reporters as to who may take the chunk of those couple saves they'll get this year?
John Brebbia would be the player that I'm leaning towards the most. You know, when it comes to bullpen situations like this, I tend to lean towards the veteran. I know there was some talk of Jordan Leisure, who will also be opening the year in AAA. You know, I think Michael Kopech to the bullpen is certainly interesting, but, you know, with some of the issues we've seen him have in the past with command, I don't think he's going to just instantly slot into the closer role. He may be used as more of a long reliever, especially if those starters do struggle.
And keep an eye out for Steven Wilson as well, acquired in the Dylan Cease trade. I think he could play in this mix as well. We'll move on over to the Pittsburgh Pirates as they travel to Miami, take on the Miami Marlins. Again, nothing too crazy. They officially signed Michael A. Taylor to a one-year contract, who will likely play in center field, moving Jack Sawinski over to right, and officially ending all hype for Edward Olivares. So that was a fun couple of months as well. We're back to what baseball normally is with Edward Olivares, losing some of the hype. But the big question we're getting out of Pirates camp is Jared Jones, whether he's going to be earning a spot. So far in spring, 16 and a third scoreless innings with 15 strikeouts, where catching staff has talked about how this might be one of the best fastballs they've ever caught. So do you have any interest in Jared Jones? This is one where we haven't gotten any official announcement as to him making the rotation, but is he someone you're keeping an eye on watch list or potentially adding as we start up this season?
Yeah, Jared Jones is definitely a player that I think is worth keeping an eye on. And frankly, I've been getting quite aggressive on myself in several of my drafts. You know, he's a player, you know, I mentioned Gavin Stone and Louis Varlin earlier. Frankly, he's somebody that I would take ahead of both of those guys simply for the upside. I know you mentioned his spring training numbers. He's been flirting with triple digits on his fastball. Frankly, I don't think the Pittsburgh Pirates have enough juice in that rotation to be able to send him back to the minors. Paul Skeens was recently drafted, could use a bit more seasoning in AAA. Jared Jones looked like he's got nothing left to prove. The Pirates don't have much there. I would be, frankly, quite surprised if he doesn't make the rotation at this point, especially as we've talked about in the podcast. A lot of players have been sent down already. I think him sticking with the team this long is a sign that he's probably going to take that fifth rotation spot.
Over to Miami, we'll stick with the rotation as well, with Yuri Perez, Braxton Garrett, and Edward Cabrera all likely to start the year on the IL. We've officially got word that Max Meyer is going to make the rotation and start the year out in Miami, along with AJ Puck, Ryan Weathers, and Trevor Rogers. So real quick, any of those four, I guess, late options or guys we didn't fully expect to all be in the Marlins rotation, who intrigues you the most? Anybody who made a priority add in your leagues as a result of this news?
Yeah, I think AJ Puck is the priority for me here. I know we've talked about it a bit before, but he's just looked so good through spring training. One of those players that, you know, the more I see him, the more and more I get convinced that this could be a breakout campaign for AJ Puck. But I'd also keep an eye on Ryan Weathers, especially as his spot in the rotation seems to be fairly locked in now with so many injuries in Miami. And frankly, you know, quite a few injuries with the minors. In the minors, I know Max Meyer is a player who's battled some injuries, and some of their top prospects like Patrick Monteverde have as well. So I think there's a long leash here for, frankly, all four of these guys to get quite a bit of run in the rotation, even if they do struggle. The Marlins likely aren't going to be calling up a prospect or pulling Cito Sanchez out of the bullpen anytime soon.
over to New York, where they will be taking on the Houston Astros to open the year. Their manager Aaron Boone has officially announced that Luis Gil has officially won the fifth starter job for the Yankees, and his stuff has probably been the best of the options. The only concern has been innings, as he's coming back from a Tommy John surgery. But any interest in Gil, as he's earned a spot for the Yankees in their rotation?
Yeah, I'm very interested in Luis Gil. I was really hoping that he would win the fifth spot here. He looked excellent in spring training. He looked excellent when we saw him last year in the majors. Hasn't exactly pitched a ton, so there may not be the longest leash. I think it would be very sort of Yankees to sort of give Luis Gil a little bit of time in the rotation, bring in a little bit of Luke Weaver to make some spot starts, maybe call up Will Warren if Gil or Clark Schmidt struggles. But I think at the moment, now that he's got that rotation spot, I'm absolutely taking a flyer on him late in drafts.
And as for the lineup, manager Aaron Boone officially has come out and said on Sunday that it'd be a long shot, or it's kind of unexpected, for DJ LeMahieu to be ready for opening day as he battles through a bone bruise on his foot. The question really is if he's going to start the year on the IL, but I don't expect him to be in the lineup on opening day, which would likely lead to Oswaldo Cabrera becoming the starting third baseman for the Yankees, at least for the time being, while they wait for LeMahieu to make his way back. But and while Anthony Rizzo also is dealing with a lat strain, had scratched from the lineup, I believe, on Friday, it doesn't seem to be a major concern. Rizzo himself came out and said this is just something he deals with during the regular season from time to time. He's not expecting to miss any time. He should be ready to go for opening day. So do you have any slight concern for Rizzo? And with the LeMahieu injury, who benefits the most? Is there someone that, with him, while Cabrera is not someone we're too interested in for fantasy, LeMahieu was supposed to be the leadoff hitter. So who slides into that spot in your eyes for the Yankees?
Yeah, I know Roster Resource has Gleyber Torres projected to be sliding into the leadoff spot, and I think he certainly could for opening day or the first few weeks. But I think Anthony Volpe is probably the biggest beneficiary of the news here because he was projected to be hitting seventh in that lineup, which is a really good lineup. So certainly not as bad as it sounds, but we know, you know, the power and speed that he can bring to the table, you know, what he's done in the minor leagues. I think Anthony Volpe could certainly wind up with a chance at the leadoff spot. And if DJ LeMahieu does wind up going on the IL, might get a chance to prove that he could be the Yankees leadoff hitter going forward.
Yeah, I don't think LeMahieu is a sold block to be the leadoff guy when he gets back. I know Boone has said throughout the offseason he wants that. But if in the first 2 weeks or so, if LeMahieu does go on the aisle, someone takes the job and runs with it, whether it's Gleyber Torres or Anthony Volpe, they may just say, okay, you go down. DJ comes back, goes drop down to the sixth or seventh spot and earn his way back up. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. As for the Astros, it's the Astros. There's not too much to really get into there. It's likely that Justin Verlander and Jose Urquidy are going to start the year on the IL with injuries of their own, but likely, at least for Verlander, not too long of a stint. We'll see what happens with Urquidy. And as a result of that, Ronel Blanco and JP France are likely going to start the year in a rotation. Any interest in either of them, or let's just move on?
Yeah, I'd just say let's just move on. But before we do, I would also just mention, keep an eye on Justin Verlander and where he's going in drafts. I'd be buying on that injury discount. I know the latest reports are that he could be back as soon as late April or early May.
Perfect. Yeah, that would be very nice to see. Baseball is it's more fun when Justin Verlander is pitching and his peak, as long as it's not against my Yankees.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more.
Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sticking with in Texas, the Texas Rangers will host the Chicago Cubs. We'll get to the Rangers in just a second because they have at least some of the more exciting news of the whole week. But the Cubs, Javier Assad and Jordan Wicks have won rotation spots with the injuries to Jameson Taillon and Drew Smyly going to the bullpen. Do you have any interest in Wicks or Assad?
Not particularly, no. I'm not overly sold on either of these players. I don't think this Cubs team is going to be a particularly good one. And especially, you know, as you mentioned, them starting the season against a lineup like Texas, I would be taking a wait and see approach and see if either of these players can prove that they're worth a roster spot.
I agree with you there. So over to Texas, where you talked about that lineup. First off, Corey Seager, he's still trending in the right direction. And I'm starting to believe more and more that he will be ready for opening day. But that's not the big news that we wanted to talk about. Wyatt Langford has officially been announced. He will be making the Rangers opening day roster. They're making the right decision, which I really like to see. So obviously, we talked a lot this offseason about Wyatt Langford. We can't really add too much more in terms of ADP or where he should be drafted. But we'll stick with the playing time question. What do you expect from Wyatt Langford? Now that he will likely be with the Rangers every day, where does he slot into the lineup, into this mix? And is there anybody who this hurts in terms of playing time for Texas?
Yeah, I know Wyatt Langford is rightfully a player I've been talking quite a bit about recently. I know Roster Resource currently has him projected to be the everyday DH. I think we might see a bit of a more of a rotation here in the outfield with Langford getting some reps at left field. I know I've had a lot of conversations with people that, you know, when young guys tend to DH like this, it gives them a lot of chance to just sit on the bench and think about the mistakes that they've made. You know, if he has a 2-strikeout day and is sitting there on the bench while the defense is out there, I don't think anyone wants Wyatt Langford getting in his head, getting thrown off his game, getting a case of the yips. So I think he certainly may see some time in DH as they sort of ease him into a major league defense. But frankly, Adolis Garcia is not exactly the greatest defender. He's, you know, certainly serviceable, but I think he's somebody who could spend some time in the DH role as well. Leota Tavares may be sort of in and out of the lineup at center field. So I think there'll be plenty of playing time for Wyatt Langford here.
Yep, and the Rangers also made some headlines as well, as they've knocked Michael Lorenzen off the agent board, signing him to a one-year, $4.5 million contract. They've been needing that another starter in the rotation, and general manager Chris Young has already come out and said he will be in the rotation, but they do still expect Cody Bradford, who was slated as the number five starter before the news, to make at least one start through the rotation while Lorenzen builds himself back up. We'll see if Lorenzen could still make the opening day roster, but any interest in Michael Lorenzen as somebody to add, or Bradford as a streamer if he's going to be making this at least starting the year in the rotation?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I would be streaming Cody Bradford to start the season. You know, great matchup against the Cubs here. Sort of see what he can do, but he's probably very much a streamer here, and Lorenzen will force him out of the rotation once he's ready to go.
All right, we'll make the next one pretty quickly. The Cleveland Guardians travel to Oakland to take on the Oakland Athletics. The Guardians have been dealing with injuries throughout. We talked early in the season about Kyle Manzardo not starting the year in the majors. That's been officially announced, as well as De Los Santos, who we thought was going to be playing this, officially being returned to the Diamondbacks from the Rule 5 draft. The shortstop mix is kind of inside. Brian Rocchio has been announced by Stephen Vogt to be the at least get the bulk of the playing time at shortstop, at least to start the year. So I guess, do you have any interest in Rocchio as a team's number two overall prospect, at least according to the Fangraphs from last year? Is he someone you have some late round interest or someone keeping an eye on? Or
yeah, I think he's worth keeping an eye on. Most teams wind up needing a middle infielder fairly early on in the season. So he's definitely a name worth watching. I wasn't overly impressed by his debut last year, but we've seen there are plenty of rookies that do struggle, especially at the shortstop position, where they're often a bit more defensively minded. Rocchio is exactly that sort of prototype with the glove he's got. It's entirely possible that he could follow up a rough rookie debut with a strong breakout season.
And this last bit of news isn't exactly fantasy relevant, but it's exciting as for just a baseball standpoint in general. Gavin Williams, we've talked about starting the year on the IL with elbow discomfort, but the fifth starter job has been won by Carlos Carrasco. Again, not too much to take away from fantasy perspective. I don't think any of us are rushing to get Carlos Carrasco on the rosters, but it's a cool story to see him back with Cleveland, where he started his major league career. So congratulations to Carrasco. Hopefully he can keep a hole at least on a roster spot, and if Williams comes back, maybe still find his way to the bullpen as he pitches for what could be his last year as he tries to wrap up a very solid career, especially given the circumstances he was dealing with.
Yeah, I could agree more. I think he's one of those players where baseball is just a lot more fun with Carlos Carrasco out there.
Yep, and as we talked about, I completely agree. They will take on the Oakland Athletics, where luckily we don't have too much to talk about. Spring training standout Miguel Andujar. I had to make sure I was reading that right as a Yankee fan. He's likely going to start the year on the IL, who just after undergoing surgery for a torn meniscus. He wasn't going to start, but he might have made his way into the playing time mix, especially although I was hampered by the J.D. Davis signing. While also Trevor Gott is going to miss the 2024 season, undergoing Tommy John surgery. He just signed a one-year deal prior to the year, and it's the A's. So anytime you have a reliever who's on a one-year contract, maybe they play their way into saves. So as far as these injuries are concerned, does it change anything in terms of playing time for the A's? Anybody stand out to you as someone worth talking about in this segment, or let's talk about more interesting teams?
Yeah, I think the only note I would have right now would be within that bullpen, you know, keep an eye on Lucas Irsig and, of course, Mason Miller. You know, without Trevor May there, there's sort of a wide-open competition for that job. And we know the Oakland A's are a team that's going to be playing from behind in a lot of games, so there could be a lot of save opportunities there.
Yeah, J.D. Davis got his one-year contract. He'll get every day at bats there, so you know, we've been interested in J.D. Davis in the past, so let's see what he can do now that he's going to be playing every day again. I say we talk about more interesting teams, but the next team we're going to talk about is the Colorado Rockies, so I don't know how much more interesting that is. The only note we have written down right here is that Ezekiel Tovar just signed an 8-year extension for $84 million, because why not? Good for Tovar. He was someone we were hyped about, at least going into the 2023 season, so his security at the shortstop position, it's pretty locked in at this point. Justin, am I missing anything for the Colorado Rockies, or no?
I would actually say to keep an eye out on Charlie Blackman. I know, like we've talked about, the Colorado Rockies are hardly an exciting team to watch, and doesn't exactly seem like the organization knows what they're doing there. But Charlie Blackman is just one of those players that just quietly continues to produce year after year. Obviously, the production isn't what it used to be. But if you're looking for an outfielder that, you know, can give you 15 homers with a batting average that won't kill you, you know, I'd be snagging Charlie Blackman, because he's certainly not somebody you're going to pay up for.
Over to Arizona, where there is still some news. Eduardo Rodriguez left his last start with a lat strain, and likely will not be ready to go for opening day. The Diamondbacks have been having a battle for their fifth starter position throughout the spring training, and that likely is going to resolve itself now that Rodriguez will not be ready for opening day. Between Ryan Nelson and Tommy Henry, so likely they'll both have some spots in the rotation now at this point. Any interest in either of these options, and what's your level of concern for Eduardo Rodriguez at this point?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in Ryan Nelson. He's looked really good, and, you know, is a player that, you know, flashed a little bit of upside last season, but I think he's sort of flown under the radar through spring training as sort of a late starter or somebody you could potentially even grab off waiver wires if, you know, you've had several of the injured players that we've talked about already on the podcast. It seemed like he was already a lock for the fifth spot before this news. And Now with Eduardo Rodriguez set to miss some time, I think his spot's even more secure.
And let's wrap it up west with the Boston Red Sox taking on the Seattle Mariners. The Red Sox officially announced that Zidane Rafaela has earned a roster spot along with Willier Abreu, which is just exciting. Rafaela shined in the Red Sox spring breakout game over the past week or so. And he's someone that has both a good combo of power and speed. So he's a name I'm particularly keeping an eye out in Boston. What's your current read in terms of playing time? You know, is he for sure going to be getting those at bats, or what's sort of the mix he's going to have to play out with Boston?
Yeah, I think like we've talked about with some of the other situations like Texas or Milwaukee, there could be a little bit of a rotation here in the outfield. But right now I'm actually leaning a bit more towards Zidane Rafaela. He's got the better glove of the two. Roster Resource has him projected to be the starting center fielder. I think both of these players are players worth drafting. If you need a spec add in the outfield, you should definitely be checking your waiver wires and making sure that they are not available, as both offer a really fun power-speed combo and should get a fair amount of playing time to start the season at least.
And the good news as well in terms of relievers, Kenley Jansen should be good to go. He appeared in one final spring training game as we wrap things up. I know they have an exhibition series coming up against the Rangers before the season starts, so maybe we'll get to see him in one more outing there. But it seems like Kenley Jansen will be good to go for opening day, which is good for us Kenley Jansen drafters. I know I just took him in that same relief pitcher only draft you were talking about earlier in the show in about the fifth round. So hopefully I was able to get some late value there. Over in Seattle, they've had the same bullpen concerns we've been talking about a lot, where both Gregory Santos and Matt Brash will be starting near on the IL with lat and elbow injuries, respectively. We know Andrés Muñoz has the job, at least start the year. But with these two guys down, who would likely be the next guys up, would be setting up those Muñoz saves. Who's a speculative ad you're looking at, or someone for a holds league or next guy up in case something were to happen to Munoz, why both these options were down that we should be circling?
Gabe Spire and Ryan Stanek are the two that sort of stand out to me the most out of this bullpen. You know, obviously either of them would just be a placeholder, with Brash and Santos likely to push them further back when they're healthy. But I think they're two names worth keeping an eye on, especially Seattle being a sort of very friendly pitcher's park, and that offense should be pretty good as well. You can't really go wrong with the Mariners bullpen, as we've seen in the past. And between the two, I'd probably be leaning towards Gabe Spire.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for the preview before week one. You know, we have a lot of exciting games coming up on Thursday to lead into a really great season. We've made it through spring training with only about an hour worth of injuries to talk about, so that's fun. But yes, you know, I'm sure we're both very excited to get the season on the roll and go through those matchups. But before we wrap up with this episode, we're in a prediction mood here. It's the start of the season. It's right around the corner. By the time you're listening to us next week, we will have actual games that matter and games that count, and we'll have real news to diagnose here. So before we sign off, we want to get our predictions out there. We'll run through division by division real quick, not a lot of analysis, but just get it out on the record and give you our World Series predictions, because why not? What's the worst that can happen here? So we're both East Coasters. We're both fans of the American League East teams. So Justin, who do you have winning the American League East this year?
Yeah, I know I've talked a lot about them on the podcast, my love for many of their players. As much as I am a Blue Jays fan, I have to be realistic here and go with the Baltimore Orioles.
As much as I want to take my Yankees, I will also be going with the Baltimore Orioles. We'll stay out east and go over to the National League. Our National League East winner will be?
I think it's the Atlanta Braves. They're a pretty safe lock, maybe one of the safest in baseball.
Yep, I agree. Go over to Central, where we have some, you know, this might be a little bit different. We'll start in the American League, your American League Central champion.
I'm going to go with the Minnesota Twins. They're looking like one of the deepest teams in baseball right now, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on just how good they're going to be this season.
Yep, I'll take the Twins as well, but you know, Tigers are going to battle, and I sprinkled a little bit on the Royals, and it wouldn't shock me if they take a huge leap step forward this year. In the National League, who is your NL Central winner?
Right now, I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Reds. I know they've had a lot of injuries, but with the young talent that they've got both on the roster and in the pipeline that could be up this season. I think of the teams in that division, they're probably the best.
I'm going to go with the Cardinals. I was interested in the Reds. I was close taking the Reds. The injuries are starting to concern me. And I think the Cardinals just have a lot of depth, and they made some free agent moves to improve that rotation. I think the Reds are going to battle them all season, but I'm going to lean the Cardinals slightly at this point. And I will wrap it up out west in the American League. I think we know where we're both going for these divisions, but your AL West champion will be?
It's got to be the Texas Rangers. I hesitated a bit at first when I was taking a look. I do think that rotation is a bit more questionable than we give it credit for. But especially as we talked about with them bringing in Michael Lorenzen, I think they find ways to get it done. It's going to be Texas.
Give me Houston. I can't bet against the Houston Astros. As much as the injuries are bugs hit them so far, it's hard for me not to trust them. I'm concerned about the Rangers' injuries right now, but they'll be in, but just won't be the division winner. In the NL West, I don't think we have to say much more. It's the Los Angeles Dodgers. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, Dodgers all the way.
All right, your American League wildcard teams. We'll do it real fast. Your three wildcard teams out from the American League.
Obviously, I got to start off here with a little bit of Blue Jays bias. I'm also going to throw in Houston, as I have Texas winning the division. And then I'm going to say the Seattle Mariners narrowly eke out the Detroit Tigers. I do think the Detroit Tigers are going to be competitive this year, but you just can't pass up that Seattle rotation.
And I'm going to be biased. The New York Yankees, of course, will get in with one of the wild card spots. And I will also give the Texas Rangers and Seattle Mariners as the final two wild card spots. So both of us have the other's team not making the playoffs. So that's going to make for some fun content throughout the year. Over in the National League, who do you have securing those three wild card spots?
Yeah, I think the Phillies are a pretty easy choice. I'm also going to go with the Pittsburgh Pirates, who I think have made a lot of changes over the last 2 years and could be primed to take a pretty big step forward. And then the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I like the Phillies and the Diamondbacks as well. And I'm going to say the Giants. I think the moves they've made this offseason, they find their way to get back in. I like the Pirates call, though, a lot. And I will not be mad if that happens as someone who's currently living out in Pennsylvania. But I think they're a year away. I think next year we might be having that same conversation, but I still think they're a little bit short, but I will root for that hard. And finally, before we sign off, we're not going to go round by round, but your World Series matchup, who's coming out of the American League, who's coming out of the National League, and give me your World Series winner.
Yeah, I know I've really struggled with this one a lot. I think I'm going to have to go with the Minnesota Twins versus the Atlanta Braves, with the Twins winning the World Series. I apologize to my fellow Jays fans out there for saying this, but that's what I have right now.
I agree with you. It's the National League with the Braves. I'm going to take the Baltimore Orioles in the American League. I think that the Burns edition, they're just got that youth that I really like. And you know, if I'm going to call up Holiday, it's going to provide a spark. And I'm really liking what the Orioles are doing right now. So I think it'll be the Baltimore Orioles against the Atlanta Braves, with the Atlanta Braves coming out on top with their stacked rotation at this point. They can battle through a lot of injuries. I'm big fan of what Atlanta's been doing, and I think they find their way to get back to the top. So at least, sounds like we got some pretty interesting different picks. So I'm excited to see which one of us comes out on top and what this 2024 season has in store for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
As always, you can find the show on Twitter at OutsideTheBoxPL. You can find me on Twitter at Callen_Elsliger. Tweeting all up throughout the season as this season gets in the way. Justin, where can our listeners find you on Twitter and any other work you got going on that you want to make sure you plug before we wrap up?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at HavelockJustin. You can also find me in PL Plus, where I'm a moderator and a regular within our Plaid, which I know is going to probably pick up quite a bit as baseball starts up this week. And you can also find me on a pitcher list. I should have some content coming out a little bit after the start of the season. I'm just going into exam mode myself, but I'll be doing some work with the reliever ranks team, and I've got some other articles coming on the site soon.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that. Like you said, it's season's here. We got a couple days left, and Thursday will be glued in, so I can't wait to see what 2024 will bring us, and hopefully everything we say here comes true. But that's good for this episode of Outside the Box. I am Callan. That's Justin. And we will talk to you all next week.
Have a great week, everyone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.